When it's all said and done, just about every one of us has a similar desire in life. And here's Skip Heitzig to tell us what that is.
I think God put within us, in our hearts, all of us, a desire. A desire that when our life is done, we know that we did the right thing. We lived with a goal in mind. We lived with purpose. We fulfilled what He called us to fulfill. Some of us, in fact, most of us, aren't content with just making a buck or making a career. We want to make a difference, don't we? We want to know that our life counted for something.
Make the connection.
Ebenezer Scrooge eventually had his past catch up with him. With the help of a long-dead partner and several other spirits, Scrooge was shown just how the choices of his past led to his present state of being a lonely old miser. In the end, however, Scrooge was able to use the lessons of his past to help create a better future. And the same holds true for us. Our past can either hold us down or be used by God to build us up. Skip Heitzig starts a new series today here on The Connection that will help us make our mark in life. But before we begin, we wanted to tell you how to get a copy of Skip's new book, one that may prove helpful for studying the Bible.
You may never understand quadratic equations. You may never be able to grasp quantum physics. But you can understand the book of Revelation. Sadly, the final book of the Bible is the one that's often ignored because of its reputation for being difficult to understand. But with a little help, you can reap the rewards from the careful study of one of the Bible's most powerful books.
The more you study the book of Revelation, the more you understand why Satan fights so hard to keep God's people away from him.
Get the help you need with Skip Heitzig's new book, You Can Understand the Book of Revelation, available for just $12 when you call The Connection at 1-800-922-1888. Most of us probably don't need to understand quantum physics, but we can all benefit from studying Revelation. Discover it all for yourself with You Can Understand the Book of Revelation by Skip Heitzig. Get your copy today when you visit connectionradio.org.
You know, the Bible tells us that God can make all things new, which implies that He can even take the past and use it to make something new for the future. How? Well, stay with us to find out.
And make the connection.
We'll begin our brand new series, Making Your Mark, in Genesis chapter 11. So if you'll turn there, Skip gets us started today with the fact that our past does have value, if we use it properly.
One of Satan's ploys, I believe, is to get you so focused on your past that you neglect what the present and especially your future is all about. Your past and all that it means is valuable as a guidepost, but it can be dangerous if it becomes a hitching post if you park there. I love the Italian custom of celebrating New Year's. It seems that New Year's Eve, just around midnight, the streets are vacated. There's no traffic, there's no pedestrians, and even the police take cover. Because at 12 sharp, the house windows fly open, and each family member will take something, some object. It could be a vase, it could be an ornament, it could be even a piece of furniture, something that reminds them of the past year, something they want to erase from their minds, and they toss it out in the streets. That might sound radical. I think it sounds like a lot of fun. But it brings up an important point that no matter how flawed the past, your future is spotless. The message today is simple, basically, and that is your past may have shaped you, just don't let it misshape you. Now, we're in chapter 11 tonight, and we begin a study of the life of Abraham. That's where we're going to study and look at the next several weeks, Abraham. It's a series I'm calling Making Your Mark, because honestly, I believe that's what you really want to do. I think God put within us, in our hearts, all of us, a desire that when our life is done, we know that we did the right thing, we lived with a goal in mind, we lived with purpose, we fulfilled what He called us to fulfill. Some of us, in fact, most of us, aren't content with just making a buck or making a career. We want to make a difference, don't we? We want to know that our life counted for something. There's a psychologist by the name of William Marston who asked 3,000 people this question: what do you have to live for? He said he was shocked to find that 94% were simply enduring the present while waiting for something to happen in the future. He said things like children to grow up and leave home, for the next year to come around, for another chance to take a long dreamt of vacation. Well, Abraham, called here Abram, made his mark in history, in his culture, and in the hearts of mankind. Three major religions look back to Abraham as their leader or patriarch. The Jews do, Christians do, we include him, and the Muslims do. And one of the indicators that this guy is really important is the amount of space that's devoted to him in the Bible. Think of it this way. 11 chapters in Genesis are devoted to the 2,000 some odd years preceding Abraham, including about 19 generations of people, 11 chapters. 14 chapters, the entire middle section of Genesis, is devoted to the life of this one man. And then we come to the New Testament. And he is used as an example in one chapter of Romans, two chapters of Galatians. He's called the father of all them who believe. He is the model of justification by faith. He's included in Hebrews 11, the hall of fame of faith. And three times in the Bible, he is referred to as the friend of God. How'd you like to have that title that God gave you, the friend of God? In fact, to this day, Arabs still refer to him as El Khalil, friend of God. We're going to look at him in the next few weeks. Tonight, however, what I want to draw your attention to, of all places, a genealogy, chapter 11 of Genesis, is that five experiences marked the early life of this great patriarch. Five experiences, four of which he really had no control over. The last one he did, it was probably his response, at least in part, to the first four, but they shaped his past. They shaped his past, but they did not misshape his past. Now let's read the text together, and if you look at verse 10 on down, you see a lot of names. I'm going to skip most of those names. Number one, because I don't know that I can pronounce them all. And number two, I have a hunch you don't care. But let's look at verse 10. This is the genealogy of Shem. Shem was 100 years old and begot Arphaxad. See what I mean? 2 years after the flood. Let's quickly skip down to verse 24. Nahor lived 29 years and begot Terah. After he begot Terah, Nahor lived 119 years and begot sons and daughters. Still going in his old age. And Terah lived 70 years and begot Abram, Nahor, and Haran. This is the genealogy of Terah. Terah begot Abram, Nahor, and Haran. Haran begot Lot. Haran died before his father, Terah, in his native land in Ur of the Chaldeans. Then Abram and Nahor took wives. The name of Abram's wife was Sarai. It will be changed later. The name of Nahor's wife, Milcah, the daughter of Haran, the wife of Milcah, and the father of Iscah. But Sarai was barren. She had no child. And Terah took his son Abram and his grandson Lot, the son of Haran, his daughter-in-law Sarai, and his son Abram's wife, and they went out with them from Ur of the Chaldeans to go to the land of Chaldea, or Canaan, excuse me, and they came to Haran and dwelt there. So the days of Terah were 205 years, and Terah died in Haran. The first experience of his early life that I draw your attention to is disbelief. Now, after a great introduction of Abram's life, like you just heard, and how important he was in the Bible, and how he's called a friend of God, you would be surprised, if not shocked, to know that he didn't start that way. He has his roots in paganism. When we open up his life, we don't find him in the land of promise, but in the land of polytheism. Mentioned Ur of the Chaldeans. It was the cultural center of southern Mesopotamia. It happens to be, get this, present-day Iraq. So it makes it very interesting to find out his roots, does it not? Now, the spade of the archaeologist has discovered that Ur of the Chaldeans was not some little podunk town in the middle of the desert, but a thriving metropolis at that time with a population of at least 300,000, as I mentioned, a cultural center, in fact, the capital of Sumer, where the Sumerians, the early civilizations, began. It was an advanced culture. Again, archaeological digs have discovered musical instruments of all kinds. They have also discovered crafts and art, artifacts that speak of a culture that was well advanced and artistic. The town had a university and a library with an emphasis especially on math and astronomy. However, given all that, the town was still pagan, for in the center of town was an impressive temple that had a ziggurat, or a large tower that spiraled up to heaven, because it was a place where people worshipped several gods, nature, it was animistic, but the principal god that it worshipped was the moon god, whose name, get this, was Sin, S-I-N. Interesting, isn't it? They didn't know what they were doing, but they were worshiping Sin way back then, the moon god. Now, what about Abram's home life? Well, putting the scriptures together and understanding where he grew up, we know that his dad, Terah, was an idolater, worshipped idols. Now, we don't have to guess that, for it says in Joshua 24, verse 2, let me read it. Joshua has the group of Israelites in front of him, recounts their history and says, "Your ancestors, including Terah, the father of Abraham and Nahor, lived beyond the Euphrates River and they worshipped other gods." They worshipped other gods. Now, presumably, some of that wore off on Abraham, on Abram. We don't know for sure how much, but that was the culture that he grew up in. Jewish commentary known as the Midrash said that Terah manufactured these little idols and Abram, his son, was his assistant. Now remember something. This is post-flood. This is post-Tower of Babel falling. So God has revealed himself powerfully in ancient times in a way that is unforgettable, and yet very shortly after that, it doesn't take long for corruption and decline and idolatry to gain a footing in the ancient world, and especially here in Ur. Further insight into Abram's culture comes years later with his grandson. You know his grandson's name, Jacob. And you know that Jacob sort of swindled his brother out of the birthright. Remember that? And Jacob fled where? Mesopotamia, where his dad, his grandpa had their roots. He goes back there, finds a guy by the name of Laban, marries his two daughters, Rachel and Leah. After a period of time, decides to come back to Canaan. But it says Rachel took from the house some household gods. Do you remember that? Little idols, little statues, and she stuffed them in the saddle of her camel. And I bring that up to point out this, that not only did Abram's family worship idols when he grew up, but three generations removed, his relatives over in Mesopotamia were still cherishing and owning these idols. So that's the culture he grew up in, one of disbelief in the true God. We could draw a quick parallel to our own culture, for Abram's early life describes a lot of us. We grew up in an advanced culture, the most advanced probably in the world today, America. We grew up in a spiritual culture, not necessarily a Christian culture, but a spiritual culture. And today, spirituality is very, very central. It's gaining a foothold. New York Times religion editor said that today we are witnessing a mass movement of individual seekers finding spirituality, but not necessarily truth. That sounds a lot like Abram. That's his first experience. Now go on down to verse 27. The second experience of his early life was death. This is the genealogy of Terah. Terah begot Abram, Nahor, and Haran. Haran begot Lot. And Haran died before his father, Terah, in his native land in Ur of the Chaldeans. We learn something from those verses. Tragedy pushes its way into the early life of Abram. This is his brother who has died. Terah's son, Haran. It says that he died before his father. We don't know exactly what this means. There is a Jewish fable that said Terah's kids, his sons, refused to worship the fire god, so he cast Haran into the furnace and let him burn to a crisp in front of him. I doubt that that's true. In fact, it doesn't necessarily mean that he kicked the bucket while his dad was watching. To say he died before his father could simply mean chronologically he died before his father died. And what it is simply meant to do is introduce to us this tragedy in the life of a father and a family. It tells us something about Abram's past. It tells us that this was a guy who, when he was growing up, he didn't skate through life unscathed from pain or sorrow or heartache, but rather, just simply by this death of his brother and later on his own father, he is shaped by that. Pain, heartache was a part of his past life. I know as a pastor that death can affect a family like few experiences can. A dark cloud settles over that family for a long period of time. And I also know that survivors never forget it if they have witnessed somebody die in their presence, and they never forget the death notification. Some of you may be chaplains or police officers, and you have given a death notification. Your daughter has died. Your son has died. Your father or mother have died. That person hearing that never forgets that moment as long as they live. Just like I never forget the night when I was 22 and my father called me on the telephone and told me of my brother's death. I can picture the room. I can get in touch with my emotions. And when those emotions come up, like at funerals or other people who are in a position like that, I can get clearly in touch with them because I never have forgotten it. And many of you have gotten the same phone calls. The death of a loved one. And it shook you. In fact, let's just say that in some cases, it even shook your faith to the core. Up to that point, perhaps life was great and God, you had him all figured out and you saw him clearly, and then after this, you weren't quite sure. You may have even said a few things in doubt or disbelief or anger at God. Maybe like Martha, who said, "Jesus, if you'd have been here, my brother wouldn't have died." It's because death can unearth our view of God, and it can challenge our faith. And my point in this is this. Even special people, even people like Abraham that had a special place and role picked by God and made their mark on society, suffered like this. It shaped their past. It was part of their past. A third experience, let's read on, is disappointment. Now, this is in his marriage. It's not that he was disappointed with his wife. Something else caused a disappointment. Abram and Nahor took wives. The name of Abram's wife was Sarai. The name of Nahor's wife, Milcah, the daughter of Haran, the wife or the father of Milcah and the father of Iscah. But Sarai was barren. She had no child. If you know anything about ancient cultures, you know it was catastrophic for a woman 2,000, 3,000, 4,000 years ago to be unable to conceive a child. It was devastating for her. It reflected her worth as a woman, her place in the culture, and her husband, in this case Abram, suffered as well. You see, in pagan cultures, they looked at this as a curse of the gods, the moon god, the sun god, the fire god. They have cursed our marriage. And this superstition even found its way into Israel, where if an ancient Israeli couldn't conceive, she thought her life was cursed by God, Yahweh. I mentioned Jacob a few moments ago. Jacob married two women and had a lot of kids. The first wife was Leah, and Leah got pregnant. And listen to what she said. As soon as she found out she was pregnant, she said, "For the Lord has surely looked on my affliction." That's what infertility was called back then, an affliction. When Rachel, his other wife, Leah's younger sister, found out that she was pregnant, she goes up to her husband, grabs him, and says, "Give me children or I die." That's a lot to put on a guy. She did it. Even the rabbis later on said seven people are excommunicated from the presence of God. First on the list, a Jew who has no wife. Second on the list, a Jew who has a wife but has no child. That's the belief system that came with this. It was a heavy burden to bear. Now, we know the rest of the story. We've read about Abraham before. And so you know that this infertility was simply a setup for a great miracle that will come later on when miraculously she conceives and has Isaac. But in the meantime, they don't know that.
The past can exude a powerful emotional hold over us if we let it. However, the grace of Christ can free us from that hold so we can move boldly into the future God has prepared for us by using the past to guide our footsteps. Well, I hope that if you have a haunting past that you found today's message encouraging. And if you stay with us, I'll let you know how to pick up a copy right after we take a quick moment to join Skip and Lenya Heitzig in studio.
Skip, can you share some ways that people have a hard time of letting go of the past or their mistakes or things that have happened to them and how the Holy Spirit can help them do that?
You know, I just ate lunch with someone I haven't seen since fourth grade. His name is Joe. We went to first, second, all the way to fourth grade. We're talking about people we knew. But since I hadn't seen him, there was a chunk of Joe's life that I didn't know about. And he was telling me about stepdads he had had. His mom and dad got a divorce very early. And he had a lot of pain of abusive stepfathers. And so I said, "Well, Joe, how did you get over those things?" And a couple of things he pointed out. Number one, his family, his immediate family, his wife, his kids. The Lord redeemed bad relationships with healthy paradigms. And also talked about involvement with his church and his relationship with the Lord. And so I instantly connected back to fourth grade with him. And then I fast forwarded to modern times to hear his testimony now because he's so sweet and so gentle and seems so balanced. And I think a key is to learn to view life through the lens of God's sovereignty, that God isn't just sovereign in your present and future, but also of your past, that you are who you are by the grace of God, losses and all. And I think of Joseph, another Joe in the Bible, who looked at his circumstances through that lens, and he said to his brothers, "You meant this for evil. God meant it for good, to save many people alive as it is this day." So to view life through the lens of a holy, perfect, just, and sovereign, loving God, using all of the bad stuff to make me who I am and to help others is a very huge key, besides the network of family and friends, etc. But it begins with seeing life through God's lens.
Well, thanks, Skip and Lenya. And I hope you're just as excited for this new series, Making Your Mark, as we are. And if you'd like a copy of this first teaching in our new series, we'd be happy to send you one for just $6. Just call 1-800-922-1888 or visit connectionradio.org. Of course, if you can share anything above that suggested donation, that would be a huge blessing that will help us continue to bring you these daily studies. So anytime you can share a little extra as a one-time donation, or if you can help support us monthly, that makes a big difference in how we can serve you as a ministry. To find out more, call 1-800-922-1888. Or you can write us at P.O. Box 95707, Albuquerque, New Mexico, 87199.
And make the connection.
We're just getting started with this new series, so join us next time as we learn more about how properly dealing with our past can help us make our mark in the future. Here on The Connection, a presentation of Connection Communications, connecting you to God's never-changing truth in ever-changing times.